Slowly and carefully, I felt my way into the almost sinister depths, with fear rising within my mind, but knowing that my fear was due to an internal reaction rather than any external malevolent force. I stood still and chose to stand with my fear rising rapidly. I had to stand and learn to experience and engage with my fear, to learn to encounter a primal sense of enclosure, to engage with what I understood to be inner daemons, aspects of my mind. After several long minutes of intense discomfort, I understood that love was the appropriate and perfect methodology to apply as an antidote, and ushered forth a radiance that embraced my daemons and chose neither to ignore nor suffer any fears. I became fearless in that environment. It was then that I realized that the very spirits of the woods, those that chose to dwell in those places that man fears, were almost testing me, exploring the heart of my soul. So reads the epigram that begins Sync Book Volume 2. Hello, I'm Douglas Bowles, and this is 42 Minutes, a production of Sync Book Radio and thesyncbook.com, a weekly conversation with the interesting artists and thinkers of our day. This morning, on this 29th day of October, as we near All Hallows' Eve, Samhain, and All Saints' Day, which marks the beginning of the season of darkness, we consider our closing chapter. I have, alas, studied philosophy, jurisprudence, medicine too, and worst of all, theology, with keen endeavor through and through. And here I am, for all my lore, the wretched fool I was before. Midway in our life's journey, I went astray and awoke to find myself alone in a dark wood. Whose woods these are, I think I know.
And so today we read from the Book of Mark. Fear not that which lies within. Enter the light that is contained within that terrifying presence, and see no enemies, but merely aspects of who you are. Hello, Will Morgan here, and today on 42 Minutes, we're going to dance the deep line by considering a story of redemption, hope, fear, healing, and impossibility. We're not closing the book on Sync Book Volume 2, but we are considering its closing chapter by reconnecting with an old friend with whom we began this journey almost a year ago. That's right. Today, we're speaking with Mark Golding, our friend from episode number 29 and 59. He is the author of the Sync Book Volume 2's closing chapter and the artist behind the chapter icons, and is therefore responsible for a large part of the book's beauty. Mr. Golding, and that's an understatement to the utmost, even his chapter is eloquently written. Mr. Golding is a prolific artist and the presence behind the Healing Magic Facebook page. More information about his work and life can be found at markgolding.co.uk. We are pleased to be speaking with him again. Hello, sir. How are you today?
I'm good, gentlemen. Thank you very much for calling me. I'm very good. Thank you. Thank
Excellent. You. Tell us about this storm and what is it doing to us today?
Well, this storm was entitled St. Jude. And St. Jude is the patron saint of lost causes. And this, we had sort of 5 or 6 days warning of this storm coming. So we had this big sort of national frenzy of fear as to what devastation and damage.
Drat.
Violent storms have battered the UK, the Netherlands, Germany, Sweden, and parts of northern France, cutting off power and felling trees and scaffolding. According to the latest reports, the storm has raged through the Baltic Sea region, causing blackouts and transport collapses. In Sweden, where winds reach speeds of 42 meters per second, the storm left without electricity about 90,000 buildings. Can you hear us, Mark?
I can. So, yeah, it was a big storm, but not as bad as it might have been.
Well, that's good. Yeah, so it feels like it's been a year since we talked to you, and it seems like everyone has, like, entered a whole new world. Do you feel the same way?
Oh, completely. Absolutely. Completely last winter, completely. And I'm only just beginning to understand the nature of the change now, 9 months further on. But it seems the whole world is on fire with the passions to communicate, understand, and revolutionize our understanding in spiritual connectivity. It seems to be everybody's on it, man. And you guys?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because in a lot of ways we're doing some of the same things, but it just feels like such a different world than where we were a year ago.
It is, and the gaps between us are shrinking. I feel that there's a sort of commonality of cause that's surging through the collective consciousness. It's on the front pages of newspapers these days. We have this crazy character here called Russell Brand, who's been storming the...
Yeah.
With talks of spirit coming away. We're there?
Yeah, we're here. We're being messed with. The universe is messing with us a little bit today. So it's interesting to me that Sync Book 2 has such there's a depth to it, but there's also it's not rainbows and unicorns. There's a darkness. I mean, Will and I spent the past year talking to most of the authors in this thing, and it's amazing how your piece both begins and kind of ends the book, and so it's amazing to me how that does encapsulate that and the year somewhat. What are your thoughts about the book? Have you explored it much?
I have. Some of it is pretty dark, pretty heavy, pretty freaky, but I have to absorb and understand all that stuff because I think the time for me to run away from my fears is gone. So I have to look into the dark minds of some of these other authors. And when all said and done, however freaky or dark they try and manifest their color, they all just want to have a cuddle. They all want a soft pillow. They all just want to be loved. So I think everybody, even the most dark and frightened people, are expressing their need to be interconnected with everyone else.
See, it's interesting that the end piece of yours has a very, I mean, most of your work has a healing quality about it. But I really feel like the sink that is explored in your chapter is this whole idea that you can heal the body through the environment. By healing the environment, you heal. Go on.
Yeah, this is the sort of the Gaic principle, I guess, is that we are, you know, we're not separate from our environment, and by proxy, whatever we do to heal and encourage the environment around us reflects within ourselves. So every time I sort of go to the woods and do water work, I'm engaging with my own obstacles, but I'm also engaging at this particular time with the world's waters, and by I cannot leave this sort of this symptom, this enormous issue of the poisoning of water at Fukushima to anybody other than myself. Not to presuppose that I can facilitate in any greater degree than anybody else, but I have to if I feel this call within myself to clear water, it can serve as this butterfly effect to this poisoning, and signing online petitions and writing to MPs does nothing to do it. And I can't rescind, I can't separate myself from this sense of collective responsibility and individual responsibility for this planet. And I'm not an eco-warrior, I'm not a fighter. I just wish to communicate further with the spirit of the land that I live on, which is the same land we all live on.
Okay, so for our listeners' benefit, in Mark's chapter, he tells us a story of how he goes on a journey of self-discovery by, and this is what's so great, you're finding a spring, but you're really, you know, being led to the source, and the source is the source of your own personal being. And so one might wonder if this is just a writerly metaphor, or if there truly was this connection between your interior landscape and the exterior landscape. Is this a true story, Mark?
Absolutely true. There's not a single exaggeration or mistruth within it. And the bottom line is, Doug, that my son recovered after months and months in hospital in a terrible condition. And whether the magic, the aspect of practical magic functions, I have no doubt. I have no doubt that my service, my dedication, my fear, my desperation, my hope were integrated into this whole almighty mission whereby I revealed this magnificent ancient pool. And the connectivity I have with this place is now, it's now created what is in a local town a sacred site.
Yeah.
People go there and they get married there, they baptize their children there, they have ceremonies there, they have rituals there. People I know, people I don't know, people travel to this place now as a place of pilgrimage. So it serves a far greater purpose than I could have ever contemplated. Because when it started, Doug, I was just a man whose son was dying, and there was nothing else I could do at the time but kind of work in this way.
Okay, and so this is happening 2011?
This was 2011, yeah.
Okay, yeah. And so at the end of your piece, you're hoping for, you know, he's recovering, but your dream is that he will come and visit the spring with you.
Yes.
And has that happened?
Yes, it has. My son's recovered. For all intents and purposes, it is a remarkable event. And whether the two have correlation, I don't need to know. I don't need to have empirical evidence other than my own understanding that there is a direct relation. And even if it's just in the metaphorical sense, it serves as an attractor for other people who are in these terrible life situations that they can engage in a way and possibly something marvelous might happen. And that's the way sort of fairy stories are created, or perhaps just rewritten in the contemporary time.
And then as far as the time goes, did you start creating your art roughly about the same time that you began working on the spring?
Yeah, the two are interconnected. And the whole process of revealing my flow through the art is in direct correlation to the flow of the water.
Hmm.
The two are not inseparable, because prior to this, my son becoming ill and my starting to draw, and I'd not drawn since I was at school, I had a breakdown of a long dark night of the soul of cataclysmic proportions, to the extent I became so ill, I'll just say I died. And so I was sort of gifted with this sense of rebirth, a second chance, and it was amplified, my potential to express myself was amplified through the working with the water and the arts. So I had this kind of joint epiphany as a result of my son's suffering.
Hmm. And so I guess the thing that I find remarkable, you know, a year later, is how, you know, like how many of these different artworks have you created, do you think, over the past year?
Well, probably in the past 3 years, about 1,000, and it's accelerating. I not the production, but the intensity of my work, and it's beginning to represent a journal of my own, I'll say, spiritual journey that is manifest for others to see. And it's opened up doors, or should I say windows, of understanding of how art functions and how the eye and art can function as a healing modality. And I've recently come to an understanding based upon scientific understandings, whereby on the back of the retina, we have 127 million receptors called rods and cones. So in essence, when we see through our eyes, we're seeing 127 million pixel matrix. And as the photons of light hit the retina, hit these rods and cones, a process called opsin occurs, whereby the packets of energy are transmogrified into a neurological chemical. So what we do, we are seeing light with the retina, but internally we are feeling a chemical response. So when I'm doing my drawings, I feel inside the chemical neuro soup, and I express these drawings, these mandalas, on paper, and to communicate my feelings on paper via the coding of the 127 million pixel matrix, which is the equivalent of playing a musical instrument with 127 million keys. But I don't have the dexterity to manipulate all the keys individually, but I can group these in clusters and chords and resonances and sequences, whereby what I feel I can put on paper to initiate a feeling in the mind of the viewer. And this is a sort of an initiatory action to open up the potentials for art as medicine, healing through the eyes. We have aromatherapy, whereby scents are used for healing. We have sound therapy, gongs, bowls, this sort of thing, where healing modalities, resonances are put into the body to engender, if nothing else, a sense of well-being. So part of me wishes to serve the greater cause, the greater community, by creating what I call medicines for the eyes. And this is in its infancy of my own understanding, but I'm looking to sort of explore and expand this this process. I'm currently working with a few friends to try and work through the understanding of synesthesia, where the senses blend to the mind, and somehow gain an understanding of where these blend and possibly open up the doors to, or the windows to, a deeper healing modality from person to person.
And have you had a gallery show of some of these works?
No, never.
This is the thing that I'm ready for, and I wonder what it would be like to have, you know, walls and walls of this stuff, and the kind of meditation that would prompt one as they move through these. And then the other interesting thing about your work is they convey, because they're all, you know, they're the mandalas, there's a wholeness to each one, that they convey both wholeness and balance and symmetry. You know, I just wonder, they each...
Well, there is something about them, and I'm still not fully clear about what this is myself yet, Doug. I'm exploring this day by day, and the individual mandalas are a representation, like a diary, a journal of my own experience that I wish to create, to sing a song, to write a story that I wish to sort of manifest and grow and improve through time. So I'm a student of my own understanding, a student of my own art form, but I don't have full understanding yet. And I don't know if and when this will come, but I'm gradually being invited. This weekend, there's an enormous event in our local city, a big city, that I've been invited to days to show my art. But I'll do this in humility, in one corner, one small corner. But there's a process, I think, whereby the whole sequencing will be like a trip for somebody. But I've yet to meet the right people to communicate about expressing this and manifesting it. But the time is coming so close when I will know more about my art myself.
Well, that's what's so exciting, is that from my perspective, you know, not inside the thing, it looks like you have clearly found your voice. And what you're doing is exploring your voice. You're like figuring out, what your voice can do, but it seems like, you know, so many artists are trying to figure out who they are, and it seems like you know who you are. You're just understanding, or like, it's just exciting because each piece realizes more fully your path, and it really feels like you're really, really on your path.
Well, yeah, I want to represent, you know, my sort of aim is to represent my life's journey in a series of these mandalas that will represent, that might mirror or form a visual structure for someone else to follow a path. And somehow there's the potential for an overlay of these sort of drawings whereby one could take a rapid process, you know, one a second over for 1,000 seconds, and one would gain the understanding I have. But this is not that I hold a higher understanding, but to give people what one might call geometric encodings, whereby they gain a self-realization of aspects of their mind that they hadn't considered in their individuality. I kind of think that most people's thought processes are in a bit of a soup, a bit of an amorphous gloop, maybe not the community with which I tend to communicate regularly, but on the whole, I think most people have never turned their attention inwards to examine their own self-experiential process, which, as we probably understand, is this collective consciousness struggling, desiring to connect with others and overcome this ridiculous dream that we inhabit.
But then it's interesting that at the beginning of your Sync Book piece, you mentioned that your strengths initially were your weaknesses, that you had this mind apparatus that you actually had to kind of move beyond to actually find your true center. Could you speak to that?
Well, that's kind of the point, but the point of that was that I hadn't realized that I had a very subtle ego and spiritual pride about the work I was doing up until that point. And it took the sort of the mincemeat grinder to wrench it out of me, to lose the spiritual pride. I had friends that kind of thought I was a bit special, a bit more interesting than them, a bit more potent than them. And even though I kind of subtly, even though I played it down and acted in humility, there was an aspect of my mind that was like a trickster element that actually reveled in this kind of sort of attention. And it took that process to actually destroy or almost eradicate my ego and pride. So maybe there's another part of the journey yet to come where the next bit's eradicated. But I had to be destroyed to be able to be reborn without that piece of arrogance, pride, ego remaining.
And to that, could you tell our listeners about the wood pigeon?
The wood pigeon. Okay, the wood pigeon. Well, after this encountering the demons in the dark of the woods, this was on the night of a super full moon. I went to the woods at kind of midnight-ish. I don't know the exact time, but I'd taken two hits of acid and decided to go right into the woods. And I was driven there by some invisible understanding. Went to the woods and was confronted my fears in the darkest, most spookiest, scariest part of the woods, and sat and held my space and overcame my fears. And then when I sort of climbed out of this chasm, out of this dark, wet slip.
Oh, did we lose him?
There he is.
Sorry, we lost you for a second. Go on.
Back?
Yes, I can hear you now. So two hits of acid, slipping and sliding. Go on.
Yep. Then came back out of that space having overcome my demons, having met my demons with love. And then I wandered up into another part of the woods, and a sense of satisfaction arose that I had met with the demon of the woods. I was no longer afraid, and nothing could frighten me in the context of these woods. And this kind of sort of blissful sort of I am one with the woods moment overcame me. And just behind my shoulder, a pigeon erupted from the ground behind me, and just this gentle creature fluttering up into the air was enough to send me into this immense shock, this panic, this fright again. And a humility came back in and was like, no, gentle pigeon can frighten you. You're just a little player, man. You're a tiny thing. You know, don't take this attitude. Stay in service to the woods. Stay in your pride. You know, a pigeon can frighten you, you know?
Yeah. That's great. I love that story.
And then just for the sake of completion, what are these woods called?
St. Helens Woods. St. Helens Woods. And these woods in the spring is in the grounds of the derelict 8th century church. So a church that's been there since the 8th century. And the spring has been there since before the Romans as well. So when the Romans came to Britain. So this spring has been there for thousands of years. And it's an ancient sacred site. And this spring is at the highest point of a town called Hastings in the south of England. And Hastings is a little town in Britain. There was a battle called the Battle of Hastings when England was invaded by the French. This high spring at the highest point of the town, I know that either King Harold or William would have camped there. So the battle was in this town or near this town, and this was the high point with the highest, clearest water in the town. So I know that either one had been there.
Okay.
We're defending or attacking a town.
So we're probably talking about ley line here.
Well, yeah, man. And I when I found the spring, it had been destroyed and covered and blocked in. And I had this feeling that I'd opened up the crown chakra of this town. And this town's got quite a dark history. You know, so I went back and opened up the crown chakra of the town, and also my own sort of spiritual process was paralleled in this. And subsequently to that, I'm now doing water work on other people's land. On this Sunday just gone, I was at a friend's woods working at clearing up other springs. So I'm gradually finding a new relationship with water and
okay.
So the town is
on board with you doing this. So you haven't found any opposition or people calling you old kook or nothing?
No, none of it. No, it's
that's wonderful.
And it's a funny place because without knowing where this place is, it's deeply hidden in a knotted holly, brambles, fallen trees to even find this space within. So no passing stranger, no one would ever consider going in there. It's completely unfriendly from the outside. But if you crawl and clamber through, you find this astonishing open space that's held within this sort of orb, this space, it's protected space. If any of you guys ever come to Britain, you've got to, I will gladly take you there, and you it's astonishing. And the town, I don't know how many people know about it, but the right people know about it, and that's probably good.
So are you of the mind that if enough individuals can find those eternal springs within themselves and you can get this water flowing, that perhaps this is the way to heal the natural environment on both a physical and a metaphysical level?
So I didn't get your question, Doug.
So my question is, are you of the mind that if enough people can tap into this eternal spring within and we can get these healing waters flowing, that we can heal both the natural and the metaphysical environment?
100%. Absolutely unequivocal yes. If I'll just run this by you, Doug. The next time you're out with your kids in the woods, or the next time you're out playing by a stream or a little brook somewhere, and you glimpse down into that woods, if there's a stream or a brook, a rivulet, if you look down and you see a blockage, climb down in that water and lift something out of the water. And you will see a shift and change in the water that will make the water sing and dance. And inside your heart, your mind, you will, in an empathetic engagement. This is a guarantee. You remember when you were a kid, you'd climb down and mess in the water. Go in the water, start clearing, and be healing the entire world's water. And water is, you know, arguably on this planet. And to encourage anybody to clean and clear water has to be the way to go. We can't rely on other people to do this job if we have a calling to do it ourselves. And I have this calling, and part of my calling is to suggest that it's playful, it's fun, there's no rules about it, it's intuitive. Childlike play. Who else is going to clear these arteries of the world? Who's going to do it, man? Who's going to do it? We can't rely on anybody else to do it. And starting small and local is practical, is beautiful. And I worked on a river about a sequence of appeared in this. And then there'll be a kingfisher, and then there'll be an otter, and then life comes back to these dead and closed riverways. And it helps the whole process flow. And, you know, the Grand Canyon was a trickle once, man, wasn't it? It started with a trickle. And any of these processes, any of these waterways that anyone chooses to work with will open up. Climb into the stream, the little brook, the tiny river, move things out of the way. Ease the flow of the water. And if you have suffering, pain, it's a shamanic journey for healing yourself and others. And if nothing else, it engenders a sense of well-being within you.
Woo. Have you ever heard of shake it out? So, have you ever heard of this? I believe he's a scientist. I could be wrong. I know he's a scholar, but his name is Masaru Emoto. He wrote the book. Yeah. You have. What do you think about that? These messages and waters and this.
Well, I think a little bit of misnomer. I, you know, the process of praying and energetically sort of vibing into water is very, very good. But to accentuate that with the process of clearing the water with your hands at the same time, you don't have to abstractly look at a jug of water on it. Sure, that's good. Sense of love, compassion, wisdom, whatever your mantra is. Whilst you're doing this water, if you're thinking about the suffering of others, if you're thinking about healing with the whole process, your wishes are embedded into the water and carried downstream, and that way it flows and joins the amorphous whole of the totality of the world's waters, because every bit of water is connected to the other in the living water essence. So it's an amplifier, it's a potential to amplify our united songs. One's united songs. Where else do we see?
This is a really good interview, and you're saying a lot of interesting stuff. We are having a lot of problems. It's kind of herky jerky with the connection we have. I wanted to mention the Emoto thing because his water crystals remind me of your artwork a lot. But I think that if we're coming up on our 42 minutes, I would like you to talk a little bit about Fukushima. Yes.
Okay.
I mean,
impossible. But I don't think it is, man. I don't think it is. We've got this whole principle of chaos theory and butterfly effect. So my whole, when I was up at the spring working pre this storm on Friday, my main functioning principle was to heal the waters at Fukushima. Impossible task, but it's kind of like David and Goliath. It's just one tiny focused bit of energy has the capacity to tip the scales. however impossible the odds appear to be. And I'm quite prepared to say that I'm going to go the extra drop and put that effort into the water. And if a million people around the world cleared a spring or area, a piece of running living water, the chances are the water would react. And what intrigues me is that the water actually caused Fukushima. So if water has a consciousness, is a living entity, it actually caused that. And if it did cause that, why did it do it? It was to call the song for people to engage. Other ways, it's the only way I can see I can take any positive action. You know, I'm not signing online petitions and writing to the government. If I want to do it, I'll do it myself. And I'll start in my local environment by proxy affecting the bigger whole, the quantum number. You know, hey, man, you know, we are better than any of that stuff. We are bigger than any of that stuff. If we have this understanding of the power of mind, why not engage in something that's impossible rather than something that's possible? So that is my feeling about it. And I'm quite happy to say that and share it with you guys. And the more people that play in this way, the better, I feel.
And so then, I mean, part of what we have to do is balance a mystical viewpoint with a practical viewpoint. And so, generally speaking, you're hopeful because of your mystical viewpoint?
Well, this is ritual magic. This is high ceremonial magic. We can pontificate and point sticks and read bits from books and kind of sort of follow other people's rituals and ceremonies and think we're doing high magic. But actually, the deep personality, the individual essence can be magnified through the world's waters. What greater communication vehicle is there? And so this is not predicated on my understanding of ceremonial ritual magic, because if you guys ever choose to get in the water and do your thing, that's your individual path. And whatever you put into it will be magnified and amplified. And there's no rule, kind of follow anybody else's rules. You can rescind to the age of when you were 11 or 12. And when you're 11 or 12, if you wanted to be in a spaceship or you wanted to be a magician, you just kind of turned your head into that zone and you did it. So by going back in the streams as 11-year-old boys, you can perform that the highest magic.
That's the ritual.
That's the ceremony. You know, man, that's it. You know, throw the books out and do your thing, man. You know, you don't need those instructions for that stuff.
What's next on the agenda for you, Mr. Golding?
The next on the agenda, I don't know, man. I don't know. I've got this event coming up over the weekend, a three-day event, mind, body, spirit. I've never done anything like this before, so that could be quite interesting. I just want to ramp everything up. I want to be, you see, it's kind of like this, man. You know, I'm 58. I'm probably, you know, maybe 10, 20 years left of my life. And I'm a grandfather now. And when my daughter gave birth to her daughter, I became a grandfather. And I was invited to join a sort of, anyway, I am now what might be described as an elder. So I have a deep, profound responsibility for all that comes after me. And so my life is finding into a space where I can serve collectively the whole of existence. You know, if it passes through you, it passes through Will, it passes through me. I just want to amplify my contribution is comprised of three aspects: love, wisdom, and compassion. You know, I make mistakes. I'm sometimes silly. I'm sometimes foolish. I'm sometimes careless. But love, wisdom, and compassion. Because when that moment comes where I take my last breath, I wish to know that I've amplified, improved, and increased my processes in these three aspects: love, wisdom, and compassion to the highest ability. I can't rescind those processes to anybody else. And I'm going to say you guys can't. It's like, who else is going to do it if you don't do it, if I don't do it, we keep ramping up, turning the turning it higher and higher from vibration frequency, and we are going to do the unbelievable. And so many people are doing their stuff in this high power frequency way. And the more we engage with the process, if we're going to live on Earth, it's going to respond. There's a co-respondence. It's going to amplify and reward us, you know. And if that reward is for others, that's perfect, you know. You know, this whole thing, I've only just been introduced to this concept a couple of days ago of seven generations, whereby the actions we take on the land should be considered for seven generations after us. And it's a marvelous thing to do, to think that if we plant an acorn, maybe in seven generations there'll be a forest there. And so this process I do with the water, we've got to look after ourselves, you know, feed ourselves, clothe ourselves. But really, it seems to me that time is ticking towards this kind of make or break thing. You know, this, you know what's going on in the world, man, and it's kind of ain't pretty, is it? You know, and you know. Sorry.
No, I was just agreeing with you. But I do suspect that was 42 minutes. So thanks for sharing it with us, Mark.
Well, thank you, guys. Lovely, lovely, lovely. I wish you well. Everything, keep in touch. Good magic to you. And get in the water, man. Get in the water. Yeah, take the kids. Take the kids. They'll love it.
Well, you've been listening to Mark Golding on Sync Book Radio, a production of thesyncbook.com. More information about our good friend Mark Golding can be found, as said before, at markgolding.co.uk. For information about the Sync Book, our guests, to check out past shows, or to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, please be sure and visit our website at 42minutes.com. If you'd like to support the show, we urge you to become a donor. It helps all of us keep this going. You'll find the donation links under each episode on the website. Thanks so much, and happy Halloween.
Hey Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start. Afraid you were made.